Members, we don't have a quorum, but we will start right now. I imagine the first thing we do is congratulate the person who got the most snow. Would that be Representative Pawlowski? I do have another announcement, and that is we've been requested to turn cell phones off, not merely down to vibrate, because apparently it has some kind of fun with the microphone system. So we would ask that you would do that. Thank you. And we will first hear from Kathy Schill, fiscal analyst on taxes.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair. If anyone in the room is also using a Sprint card and they are trying to use it to access the Internet, that also causes interference with our system. So I noticed none of the members are, but we had a meeting with technology, and they traced at least some of those that hum that we're picking up to those devices.
Okay. We will become Luddites for today. Thank you. Michelle, please proceed. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Kathy Schill. I am one half of the team of fiscal analysts that does work for the Tax Committee. My colleague, Cynthia Templin, she might show up somewhere along the line for this presentation. I imagine she's been delayed by the snow. But Cynthia is responsible for the revenue side of the budget sheet. She helps the Tax Committee with income tax, sales tax, corporate income taxes, motor vehicle sales taxes, and various other excise taxes. And I know the members have received a booklet like this, and you might have it in your office, you might be very familiar with it. If you're not familiar with it, the revenue side of the equation is often reflected historically and with references to statute in this booklet. So I just remind you that I know that Department of Revenue has sent that booklet to your offices. My responsibility with the Tax Committee includes property taxes, both state and local, property tax refunds, local aids and credits, TIFs, healthcare taxes, mining, and environment taxes. I will be referring to this document that you have. It's a five-page summary of what goes on in the Tax Committee. On the tax side, on the spending side of the equation, the general fund budget for the Tax Committee is approximately $3.1 billion of the overall $32.5 billion for the 08-09 biennium. That's about 9.6% of spending. The only other areas spending more money is K-12 education and healthcare taxes. This is a pie chart, and you're very familiar with it. There are 15 other ways to spend, and the property tax side of the equation comes in this piece of the pie. There are 32 budget activities in the tax and credits area, and you can find that on page 2 of your document, where they are all listed. The House Committee on Taxes has the dual responsibility of overseeing state revenues and certain state appropriations from the general fund that support aids and credits. It's important to distinguish among these property tax relief programs, and we have, let me see, three different kinds of programs: property tax aids, property tax credits, and property tax refunds. And you can see how they're grouped here. The refund category has six different programs: taconite, tax relief, aids and credits, property tax credits, a slew of local aids, including local government aid, county program aid, county transition aid, pension aids, and other kinds of expenditures such as PILT payments and certain special taxing authority for emergency medical services. I've distinguished on the next page the differences between these programs. And it's important to understand that because each program has a distinct purpose of what it does and exactly who it serves. Property tax aids are payments to specific local taxing jurisdictions, counties, cities, school districts, with purpose of replacing property tax levy income. And examples of that include, once again, local government aid, county program aid, and what you see in the education committee with K-12 aids and so on. Property tax credits reduce property tax liabilities for individual taxpayers, and then local taxing jurisdictions receive payments for these credits. That includes market value homestead credits, the agricultural value credits, border city credits. And then thirdly, property tax refunds are direct payments to homeowners from the state, and examples of that include homeowner property tax refunds, renter refunds, and targeting refunds. In all cases, the programmatic effect of this property tax relief is that property taxpayers pay less than what taxes would be otherwise, and the state is making up the difference, and that's why you see spending in the tax committee side of the budget. However, support to local government varies greatly from program to program. What we mean by that, not everyone gets the same amount. We have formulas that drive some of these tax credits and underlying reasons for local government aid and so forth. As we move to the pie chart, you can see what actually, how the monies are spent for the property tax aid and credit budget, the $3.1 million that I referred to. Property tax aids represent approximately 51% of the budget, and you can see local government aid is this side. If I drew a line right across here, you'll see the three major programs. You've got local pension aids, county program aid, local government aid. That's the 51%. Property tax credits represent 18.7% of the budget. That includes market value credits and other kinds of credits. And property tax refunds represent approximately 24.3%. Homeowner property tax refunds, renter refunds. And the remaining portion is the other, approximately $167 million. I've included a table, I believe it's the third page of the layout of your packet, where you can take a look at some of the spending going on. You see base level spending for refunds, local aids, property tax credits. And then you see the governor's proposed budget, where we're taking a look at mainly homeowner property tax refunds, local government aid, and an increase in market value credits. Overall changes to the budget as proposed by the governor is approximately 6%, and the change from the base is approximately 2.1%. The last page of your diagram is an example of the budget activity lines that we have in the aids and tax credit area. Now, I've got a catalog going for each of the 32 items that we mentioned. And what this does, this is the first page of several pages in case you have further questions, where you can take a look at a brief description of each of the tax and credit programs. You can take a look at the spending and the percentage change that occurs. This document is done for the November forecast, and as we receive new information later in this week, it will be updated. So if you have any further questions on any specific item in the tax or credit side of the budget, we have this reference point. That concludes my presentation. Madam Chair, I'd be ready for questions.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Schiller. Are there any questions? Any members? If not, Cynthia Tamplin, would you like to make a presentation, please? You don't, okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm Cynthia Temple, I'm fiscal analyst for the tax committee. Fortunately, I'm fortunate enough that Mr. Marks has covered the revenue side of the committees. And, of course, the revenue portion will all change this week with the February forecast, so I'm sure you'll be hearing from Mr. Marks again.
Okay, thank you very much. Members, are there any questions for either of the testifiers? If not, thank you very much for your testimony. Do we have a quorum yet? Okay. Apparently, we still don't have a quorum, but we could have Representative Morrow has a bill to present. We could take testimony at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I represent Terry Morrow, and I'm here on House File 472.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Or Representative Morrow. Sorry about that. Anyway, well, if you would like to move your bill. Sorry about that. Well, if you'd just like to begin your testimony, I think we'll go there. Thank you
very much, Madam Chair. This situation that's been covered by House File 472 involves wind energy production incentive credits. There is a constituent in my district, and maybe others as well, who found themselves in Mr. Arnold's position. Mr. Arnold submitted his application to participate in the production incentive plan that's funded through Excel funds. Mr. Arnold sent his application in December 2004. Apparently, it came back to him damaged in the mail in January 2005. By the time he resubmitted the application, it was too late for the deadline, so he missed the opportunity to recoup some of the money he would have otherwise been eligible for. In previous committee hearings on both the Senate and the House side, members of the Commerce Department have testified that at least Mr. Arnold and others in his situation are fully deserving to participate in the program. There is no direct fiscal impact upon the state budget if this bill were to go through. This, again, is funded through monies obtained through Excel for directly or indirectly for casts being kept at Prairie Island. I don't have much more to say. Mr. Arnold testified in previous hearings, but given weather, I told him he didn't have to make the drive up from North Mankato to be here this morning.
We've got a bit of a dilemma.
We do have a quorum,
and the next bill is simply a re-referral to K-12 finance. So, maybe we can go to our next.
Thank you. Representative Moore, thank you for your testimony, and if you just want to wait until we have quorum, then we will move your bill along.
Madam Chair, be happy to.
Thank you. And the next one is House File 779, Representative Bly. Okay, we now have a quorum, so... The meeting is now called to order, and we will at this time, I think, move the approval of the minutes, approve the minutes from February 19th. All right, so the minutes are approved.
We better vote on
it. Okay, I'm sorry. The minutes have been moved. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Representative Garofalo is the last member to appear. We'll just move along. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Approximately how many minutes late?
Okay.
Madam Chair,
somewhere in your family.
Representative Tolbert.
I would move that House File 472. Be recommended to pass, and as per the actions of the committee that it was heard in the Energy Committee, I would move that it be placed on the consent calendar.
Okay.
I think it's strictly non-controversial.
Yes, and so that we first need to accept the division report.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, and now Goldberg.
And now let Representative Kofi make that motion.
All right. Representative Hetzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 472 be recommended to pass and to be placed on the consent calendar. Members, we heard testimony on this bill in the Energy Policy and Finance Division. It's totally non-controversial. It's an exceptional case based on, as Representative Morrow said, simply an act of faith in which his timely application was somehow mangled in the Postal Service and returned to him too late to for him to reapply. And as I said, there are no fiscal implications, no controversy, and it's a very simple, straightforward bill.
Thank you, Representative Hilty. Is there any discussion?
No,
thank you. Oh, Representative Rupidia?
I'd like to ask Representative Carlson if he ever remembers that. In his day, a freshman getting her first bill placed on the consent calendar. I don't think I've ever had one.
After all these years, it probably did, but I can't think of an example offhand, Madam Chair.
I'm just wondering then, Madam Chair, if this is a good precedent to set. I'm kind of nervous about this. Maybe our friends on the other side will leave him alone when he takes the first calendar as well.
Maybe.
Thank you, Representative Lucavina. Okay. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Mm-hmm. What? Motion fails.
Madam Chair, the next bill, House File 779, by Representative Bly, is a referral to the K-12 Policy Committee, so I would move that we re-refer to the... we have to adopt the... Bill, is that still in division? Well, it doesn't have a division report. Okay, this would be a motion, and Madam Chair, that would need to the Energy Policy and Finance Committee would need to move to adopt the division report. Representative Hilty would be. Oh, it came out of Minnesota Heritage.
Right.
Okay.
Representative Gowers.
Yeah, I
was
probably
going to
step into more
stops. Madam Chair, I'll move the division report.
Okay. Is there any discussion?
I don't see Representative Yarrow.
No.
So.
Is there any discussion to this? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Adopted.
Madam Chair, now we simply need to make the motion to go to the I'm told that the motion needs to be that we re-refer the bill to K-12 finance with no recommendation.
Policy.
Or policy, excuse me, policy with no recommendation.
Members, we will re-refer this to education policy with no recommendation. Okay. Is there any discussion? Do you have any presentation to make, Representative Blythe?
I can certainly offer a brief explanation of the bill if members would like that, Madam Chair.
That would be fine. Very brief.
Okay. This is a bill that would create an Office of Indigenous Language to promote and preserve the revitalization of Indigenous Native American languages in Minnesota. These languages are slowly disappearing, and extremely few people remaining can speak them. It includes various pre-kindergarten through grade 12 measures, most of them have language immersion proposals, and that's really the thrust of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Bly. Is there any further discussion? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Bly, I'm just wondering if you could talk to me a little bit about funding. I'm wondering if this is a group that's going to come back every year for additional funding, or if it's a one-time appropriation, or how that's going to work.
What we're trying to set up is a way to get money from several different sources, some from state government, some from other areas. It is possible that they may come back for additional monies, but I think that it's to set up some grants, and it's hopeful that those money streams would come from a variety of areas, not just from the state government. But there may be need to come back as the program expands to ask for more money.
I'm looking through my stuff here. What is the appropriation?
I understand. Excuse me, Madam Chair and Representative. I have a meeting set today to try to finalize those numbers. They haven't been set yet. In part, I hope you can understand that this is not the easiest bill to work through. I want to make sure that I'm working in cooperation with the tribes and with the various government agencies that represent Native Americans. So it's not something that is easily set, and as we've negotiated with them and talked about what we can do, we haven't set a number yet, but I have a meeting today where we hope to do that. I'm also meeting with the Department of Education today to finalize some other things in that area. So I believe that when we present before the Ed Committee, we'll have those questions answered.
Thank you, Representative Wright. Representative Zarafel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. More, I guess, a process question for you or for Chair Carlson. This bill doesn't have a fiscal note now. I assume at some point it will. At that point, will the bill then come through the Finance Committee a second time so we can scrutinize or review the bill again?
Representative Zarafel, yes, it will.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Cornish.
That was my question. We're going to get to see it again. Yeah. You think we'll see it again as an omnibus finance bill rolling through, or will it be a standalone? Any idea yet?
Madam Chair,
this would have to come back over to the Finance Committee, and then it would be re-referred to the Finance Division, and that would be a decision by the division as to whether they would report it out as a freestanding bill or fold it into the K-12 finance bill.
If you, Madam Chair,
Representative Cornish,
if you could explain, I love being on committees and everything, but sometimes I'm wondering about this one. And how do you make up your mind if we're going to see a bill again, or if it disappears and we never see it again? Did they eventually all come back through here? Because I noticed a lot of the finance bills come to here and they get immediately re-referred, and I'm wondering why they don't just go from the speaker to that committee rather than all this paperwork stuff and we're seeing what's the purpose for that.
I defer to Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, the bill that we have before us now, as my understanding, was requested by Representative Mariani to take a look at the policy implications. And so that's why I mentioned initially that it was simply a re-referral. If the K-12, or early ed policy committee, I should say, the E-12 policy committee takes positive action, then their motion will be to re-refer it to finance. And then a determination is made in the Finance Committee as to which division would appropriately take up the bill. And in this case, it would be the K-12 Finance Division that would take it up.
Madam Chair,
Cornish,
are we, in your opinion, a really viable committee that we're going to be able to progress or stop bills, or are we going to be a kind of a pass-through? Because I've always wondered about ways and means and finance and all the shipments back and forth. I mean, will we get into the guts of a bill when it gets here and can stop it or progress it either one?
Madam Chair, when a bill is referred to division, it's my intent that most of the discussion will take place in division. That's why I've announced when the bills have come forward that the author will do a presentation of the bill and they can have people available to answer questions. But when the bill is before us, whether it's the omnibus bill, and that's when we get our heavy workload near the end of the session, there are amendments in order before this committee. There are amendments in order when they're in division. So a bill is always, as you know, until it leaves this committee as a work in progress.
Are there any further questions? Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Bly. Just going through this, I'm wondering, it's a pretty big deal to create another group like this, and I'm wondering, are there accountability measures worked in here so we can see how the financing is going to work? And then also, specifically on the financing, will the tribes also have to contribute money for the operation of this? You talked a little bit about trying to figure it out beforehand, but if you could talk about it a little bit.
Representative Bly.
I believe, yes, the council that's set up will be looking for funding streams from a variety of areas, including the tribes. And I think that... The other thing that makes it somewhat difficult to say which committee it'll go to, there are pieces of this bill that might be considered with higher ed because we want to train native language speakers to teach the language. There's a piece of it that may be early childhood because there are programs which would create language immersion, early childhood programs, and then there's the K-12 piece of it. I'm confident that, yes, there will be accountability measures. I think the council itself will approve grants that would go to various groups, and I'm sure that there would be an accountability procedure built into that grant system as well.
Thank you, Representative Bly. I'll follow up, Representative Pepin.
Madam Chair, Representative Bly, is that specifically stated in the bill, some type of reporting measures, or are you just hopeful that it will?
It's not currently stated in the bill, but, excuse me, Madam Chair and Representative. It's not currently stated in the bill. My hope is that the language changes that we'll be making after we've met with finance representative, that it will be resolved and explained.
Thank you, and I would encourage that.
Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Pepin, I was just going to say, I think this bill is still a work in progress. The concept of this bill is extremely important, and that's to preserve a couple of native languages in this state that are ready to be extinct pretty quick. I mean, there's very few elders speaking Ojibwe or Lakota, I believe it is. And when I look around this table, there's still German speakers, and in fact, I think Representative Leader is fluent in German, learned it at home when he was a kid, and there's Norwegians still speaking Norwegian in the country, and Swedes, and Gaelic, even, and Polish, excuse me, Representative Pulowski, and I look around the table here, and Croatian and Italian, those languages are spoken yet. These two languages are going to be extinct pretty quick if somebody doesn't do something. That's the intent of this bill. I think it's more a concept right now. And Representative Bly is trying to get it through a committee, and I'm sure that I believe in the higher ed bill, university's proposal, that UMD even has a component for native languages, or for Ojibwe at least anyway. So, I mean, I don't think we have a handle on what the cost is going to be or what the oversight yet is, but the need for it, I don't think there's a person at this table that can argue the need for this bill.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Representative Garofalo?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. And again, not to the contents of the bill, just more of a process question. And I don't want to beat this into the ground, but we asked before whether we're going to be seeing this bill a second time if and when it gets a fiscal note, and the answer was yes. And I'm trying to figure out why we're hearing this bill today, because it would seem that if we're going to hear the bill once in... The chair doesn't have to answer it. Maybe Chair Carlson wants to answer it.
No. Representative Garofalo, that's because this bill needs to be referred to the policy side, to the education policy.
So, Madam Chair or Representative Carlson, in that instance, we're referring bills without hearing them in the committee. We agreed that we're going to hear the bill once it gets the fiscal note, if it makes it that far. So, again, why are we hearing it today?
Representative Carlson.
In a nutshell, and I mentioned this earlier. The bill was referred to finance, but there's some policy questions that are in the bill. And so the chair of the policy committee requested that it be re-referred to the policy committee. So what we have before us right now is simply a re-referral. They will take the issue up in the policy committee. They will, if they act on it favorably, re-refer it back to finance if there's any fiscal costs at all to it. So this is simply, like you see on the House floor periodically, where you have a re-referral. And it's my understanding that both of the chairs agreed to the re-referral or to meet the request of the E-12 Education Policy Committee's request to see it. So we really don't have the bill before us in terms of a bill to mold, if you will, today. It's just a re-referral motion.
Okay.
But it does, because it is in finance, it has to be re-referred to the House floor and then back to the E-12 Policy Committee.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. With that in mind, members, I'll move House File 779 with no recommendation and recommend that it be re-referred to the E-12 Education Policy Committee. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
House File 779 will be moved with no recommendation to recommend to re-referral to the E-12 Education Policy Committee. Adopted. Members will hear testimony from Jim Reinholtz. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Reinholtz.
Madam Chair, members, for the tape, it's Jim Reinholtz with the Fiscal Analysis Department. I staff the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Committee and the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. You should have been distributed two handouts that I put together for the presentation on the description of the committees. I will choose to start with the Ag, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. If you would find that handout, I'll walk through that. And one of the pages would tell me which one of these buttons turns on the overhead. I will. I can't read that. You should be completed. You should have the handout, and I'll just go through it quickly. Obviously, the first page is just the title page. The next page lists the accounts that are underneath the direct control of this division. You can probably read faster than I can talk, so I'll just skip through that then. The next page is a pie chart that I believe you've seen on just about every one of these presentations by the fiscal staff. And it's a Ag and Veterans Affairs, as you see down on the bottom, is 0.3 of the general fund in the November forecast. A very small portion of the total general fund expenditures, but one that is very dear to the hearts of many members of the House. The next page just shows the dollar amounts. In this case, Agriculture and Veterans Affairs, if you follow that over, you can see is the 0.3 again. It's a total of $98,792,000. This is the base level for 0809 coming out of the November forecast. And once again, obviously just a small piece of the pie of the general fund pie. The next page of the handout that I have for you, this one I put together to show some of the changes over time in the accounts in this division. And if you follow it, the first column is the fiscal year 02-03, and then it goes through the 04-05-06-07 into the forecast for the current one, showing the dollar change and then the percent change. The top half of this chart is the general fund, the bottom half being all funds. You can see there's some significant changes in some of the agencies, both on a percentage-wise and a dollar basis. agricultural department over that period of time down 18, almost 19% in the general fund. The AURI down almost 50% in the general fund, and the Veterans Affairs up 78% in the general fund. So there's been significant differences within the accounts as far as changes over that period. One thing to point out is that if you look at the change in the general fund over that period, all agencies down about 12.5%, but if you go down to total funds, it's up about 2.79%. Primarily due to increases in federal funds to some of these agencies. The next piece in your handout is a description showing the November forecast for the current biennium forecast base for 08-09, and then the governor's recommendations and then the changes. As you can see, significant increase by the governor in this area in his recommendations, primarily into Veterans Affairs, and on a percent basis to the AURI, the governor is recommending a significant percent increase to this agency in the upcoming in biennium. The next handout or slide would be the listing of the individual change items that the governor is recommending in this division by the agencies. I won't go through each one of those. I just point out in a couple of the largest ones. In the Department of Agriculture, the largest two items would be the governor's recommendation of $4.5 million for the biennium for the Clean Water Legacy Program. This is a program that goes across four different agencies. This is the Ag Department's portion. And then on line 15, the Next Gen Bioenergy Initiative of the governor of $5 million in each year of the biennium is a large item in there. The Animal Health Board has some additional money for the bovine tuberculosis program recommended by the governor. And down in the Veterans Affairs Department, there are numerous items recommended for increase. Most of these increases obviously being driven by the increasing number of veterans coming home from the war in Iraq. The last item in the handout on the agricultural area here, I put in for you some information on the ethanol producer payment program. It seems to always be the number one topic of interest when I do these summaries before committee, so I wanted to include some information on this program. What this is laying out is the projected payments, the actual for the 06 and then projected for 07 through 13. This would bring this program to the end of its funding. As you see, if you look at it, the chart, the dark portions of that chart are what are called the regular payments. This program was funded at 20 cents a gallon for ethanol producers. It's a producer payment subsidy that was intended to encourage ethanol production in the state. 4 years ago when there was general fund problems, the producer payments were lowered to 13 cents. At that time, there was also language that said that those payments would eventually be made whole back to the 20-cent payment. That slanted line on the area on the chart is making those, they're referred to as deficiency payments. Those go through primarily through 2012 with a small portion of it being made in 2013. And without further changes to statute, that would be the end of the payments in this program. Madam Chair, that would be the end of my presentation on the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Unless there's any questions, I would move on to the Environment and Natural Resources.
Representative Piemar, I believe, has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I realized that the ethanol producer payment program was, when it started, was provided an impetus to rural Minnesota and to grow the ethanol program. But I don't understand why all of the ethanol plants that are getting producer payments now are making nice profits. Why we're continuing to subsidize them with state general fund money?
Mr. Reinholz.
Madam Chair, Representative Paymar, that has been the decision of the legislature to continue that funding.
Well, Madam Chair, there's a bill that will be introduced today that would maybe change that, so if anyone's inclined, that will rectify this problem and put maybe $10 million into the general fund that should be there, could sign out of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Paymar. Yes, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Reinholz, could you, maybe not here, but if it doesn't take too long, on your on this particular sheet, you have the Next Generation Bioenergy Initiative. Do you have a bit more information about that, or could you give me some direction as to where I could find out what that program does and where that money's coming from?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, that is a governor's initiative. It is general fund dollars being recommended in the Department of Agriculture's budget. The additional information on it would, of course, be found in the governor's budget documents that were sent to the legislature. The department has come before the division and made some preliminary presentations on that. It's primarily being proposed as a subsidy for a grant program that will promote gasification technology, which is, I'm getting into technology that I'm pretty much quoting what I remember out of the presentation, is it uses a low oxygen level burn process and is meant to create power, and would primarily be used at some of the either cellulosic biofuels plants or the current ethanol plant. It's in some early stages of the technology development, I believe, and this is intended to try to use some demonstration projects. I believe the program is still being, the details are really still being developed by the administration and are being, they were planning to come before the division with some further details before the division makes their recommendation.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. Representative Mahoney.
I'm going to just figure that as the fiscal analyst, you could tell me if this is money being moved from one division or department or program to another, or is this new money coming from somewhere?
Madam Chair, I would classify it as new money. It's general fund dollars showing up in the governor's budget, and really in a new program, a new initiative, new money, in that sense, we'd usually say it's new money.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Reynolds, was there a program that's not in the governor's budget from 2 years ago because this one is?
Mr. Reinholz.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, not the governor, at least in the ag and environment area, hasn't cut any major programs. I'm not sure if I could speak for the other areas. I don't think you could make any connection between the two in any case. The programs in governor's budget, there are increases and decreases, not necessarily related to each other yet. But I'm not aware that one was cut in order to fund this one. It doesn't appear that way.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
I could get more information from which division, the Ag Division?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, yes, this initiative is governor's, will be for the Ag, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Division. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Cornish.
In response to Representative Paymar's question about ethanol, in defense of ethanol, they're not all making hordes of money like it has thought, and there's some of the plants that are going offline, and I don't think it's going to be in the best political will to cut subsidies to energy and biofuels. And in fact, we're probably going to have to subsidize more than ever as we look at switchgrass and biomass and methane digesters, wind and everything else that's out there. I think probably putting more money in than less. We have to proceed very carefully here when you're talking about the ethanol subsidies and payments, because there's a lot of our businesses that get subsidies. And if you look at the ones where you're going to meet it out, which the ones are making money and which aren't, it's going to get the involved process.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Representative Mahoney.
Well, in response to Representative Cornish's response to Representative Paymars, just so everyone on this particular committee understands that the state of Minnesota is so down the list on what we invest in biofuels that we're the bottom of the barrel in what we invest. You go to multiple states and they are investing not millions but hundreds of millions of dollars in the research and the advancement of alternative fuels. So whether it's $10 million that should be in the general fund or $10 million that should be in subsidies, we should actually start looking at what places like California and Iowa and Wisconsin are doing. We've lost out on roughly, pretty easily said this year, $750 million in research grants and subsidies from federal and states and large corporations because we're not willing to have the vision to lead on alternative fuels. We're playing at trying to do press conferences. So if we're going to quibble over $10 million, you might want to start looking at the bigger picture rather than $10 million.
Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to refresh everybody's memory, we were given 20 cents a gallon, and then when the budget went down, we didn't get any, and so what we're doing is actually filling in the 20 cents that we should have had a few years ago when we weren't making huge profits.
Representative Cornish.
Representative Mahoney, a question to you is, when is enough ever going to be enough for you? I mean, we're the leader in biofuels and bioenergy, and the nation, people look to us for direction. It seems like education. We can lead in the top three or four categories of education. But you'll go to the internet and find one study where we don't and say we're down in education. It's like this with energy and anything else. I wish somebody would look at the positive. We're dumping millions and millions of billions of dollars into research. And Minnesota's known for research. I mean, the ethanol companies that you're talking about are the leaders in research. And fermentation process and being more efficient, the ethanol plant down in Winnebago, Minnesota, is shutting themselves off of all outside energy. They're going to have wind energy, and they're getting rid of the propane. They're going to be completely self-contained, one of the most environmentally progressive institutions we have. I mean, the very companies you're talking about and the very states you're talking about, behind, you can always pick out somewhere behind them. I'll grant you. We can go find something that we might be the last on the list on, but look at the positive in energy. I mean, why are people calling us on the phone and asking us for our advice? So much for that.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Mr. Reinholz, would you like to continue with the second part of your testimony?
Madam Chair, members, then I would refer you to the second handout. The title page would be Environment, Natural Resources, Finance Division. And I'll move to that then. The first page, once again, is just a listing of the accounts, which I won't read to you. I assume that they're pretty familiar to you all. The next page, then, is that same pie chart again. And on this one, you can see Environment and Natural Resources is down on the lower left corner, 0.9% of the forecasted general fund for the upcoming biennium. Once again, a pretty small piece of the general fund pie. Just to put that in terms of the dollar amounts, you'll see that this corresponds to the pie chart, and the dollar amount for Environment and Natural Resources for the biennium, $284,434,000, once again, 0.9%. The same layout on this chart as I described in the agriculture area, showing the changes from fiscal year 2003 to the forecasted 08-09, and you can see on the top is the general fund, the appropriations to the agency, down 17.4% over the total on those accounts. Some of that is due to shifting, particularly in the Pollution Control Agency. Over the last few budget cycles, there was some movement of revenue and expenditures out of the general fund into the environmental fund. That was about $12 million a year in the Pollution Control Agency, so it sort of overstates the reduction, and that's where if you go down to the all funds, the second half of that chart, on the PCA, even though up above, you can see it's down 56% in the general fund, and overall funds, it's actually up 4.1% over that period. The committee's made some changes in the funding and resources and the revenue streams. Once again, you'll see the general fund is down 17.5% over that period, but all funds is up just slightly. The next chart is showing the information on the current governor's recommendation, November forecast at 295 for 06-07 at $295 million, the base for 08-09 at 284, and the governor's recommendation is 345. It's a significant increase over the 06-07, 17%, and over the base 21%. This is general fund dollars only. The next slide or hand page on the handout shows the governor's recommendations in the environment natural resources area for new initiatives. In the first agency, the Pollution Control Agency, a large recommendation on clean water legacy funding. The Pollution Control Agency is the lead agency in this initiative. Legislation was passed 2 years ago establishing the program, and there was some one-time funding a year ago for the current fiscal year. This governor's recommendation is now bringing that funding into the 08-09 in the PCA. That would be primarily for monitoring of the waters and the development of the reports that come up with the plans on how to clean up those waters. The Natural Resources Department has a significant recommendation from the governor also in the Clean Water Legacy Program. Also a related item in the ethanol water supply issues. And the other items, probably the largest one, are some general fund investments in the DNR Forestry Program. In the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the largest item recommended by the governor, $10.9 million over the 2 years, is once again a clean water legacy item. The rest of those I won't go through. They're listed there. If you have any questions on it, some of that has been presented before the Environment Natural Resources Finance Division, but they are still making, PCA is making presentations currently. The last page on your handout that I included, just to show that even though this division is a small slice of the general fund pie, it has numerous other sources of funding, primarily through the fees and the license revenue and the DNR has. So it has a very complicated mix of funding coming into this division that the committee makes their recommendations eventually to on the budget. Madam Chair, that would be the end of my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. Are there any questions? Representative Cornish?
Madam Chair, just for the committee's notification, there's going to be a bunch of glorious bills coming through here with the environment budget. People this year are asking for all sorts of free licenses, whether it be for seniors or veterans or whatever. And I'd ask you to be very skeptical of this because it takes money matching funds out of the federal. And if they do that, somebody brings a bill like that forward, I'll Representative Wargenius knows this too, hopefully they'll be find money somewhere to replace that in the pot. If people want to get offended and do things like that, that's great, but just so we pay for it somewhere else where it doesn't drain the human fish budget, which is a dedicated account we have to protect.
Thank you, Representative Cornish. Representative Wargenius, do you have any comments with regard to your committee and this report?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will point out a few things that I think members should be aware of. When the Clean Water Legacy was passed last year and lauded by many, it was based on the assumption that there would be about $100 million a year in funding to actually carry it out. This bill provides $20 million a year and is less than the governor had in his budget last year, which was the first year. At the rate of funding in this bill, the governor's plan is to clean up our waters in about 200 years. So that is one concern of the committee. There is another concern that I see that will come up with the amount of money in lands, which was dropped substantially, and given the issues at 3M and some of the Superfund sites that have not been cleaned up and put on the back burner, I think you will find lots of discussions about that. With regard to the DNR budget, the parks funding is flat and the attendance is flat, and I think folks are concerned about that. Where we want more money, it's fees on folks, or where the DNR is suggesting more money, it's fees on folks. Trails is down substantially, again, the question of fees. Fish and Game is doing better. Ecological Services is way down. And the DNR budget looks better on paper because there is an extra, there's $41 million in that budget included for PILT payments. And that's substantially about a 10 to 12, I can't remember which, over the last biennium. So there are monies that the governor is suggesting to pay for permits for ethanol mining and other economic development scattered through all these bills. So that's my summary.
Thank you, Representative Roginius. Are there any further questions on this topic? Matt, thank you very much for your testimony. At this time, I would like to invite Representative Paymar if he had any questions regarding the presentations by House Fiscal Staff. I don't think he was here for his comments at that time. So if you have anything you'd like to present, please do so now.
Madam Chair, I was here for the presentation. I don't have any questions if you want me to.
If you have any comments.
So the only thing I would add to what Mr. Carter presented last week on the public safety finance bill is that, this legislature has increased sentences for sex offenders and drug offenders, and that's been one of the reasons why we've seen such a spike in the population at the Department of Corrections. And even though we incarcerate less people than other states, in the last 10 years, we've been one of the fastest-growing states in relative to incarcerating prisoners, which is driving the DOC budget. So there we have it. The courts are looking for about $30 million over and above the governor's budget, and they're actually threatening layoffs if there's not more resources, so the committee's going to have to examine that thoroughly. They also want to increase, which I think is a good thing. I think between 8 and 10 drug courts in greater Minnesota, and there's a move to have more problem-solving courts for those offenders who have mental health problems as well as drug and alcohol problems, which I think is a good thing. I just say that the committee seems to be moving in the direction that the governor is while recognizing the issues for reentry of inmates into society, that I think that we're going to need to have more resources if we're going to be effective in those reentry efforts. Presently, 95 to 97% of all inmates get released from prison. So the idea that we're just going to lock them up and they're not going to cause a problem anymore is simply not there. That's simply not realistic. So the question is what kind of inmate do you want released from those facilities, and in what condition do you want them when they're living in your neighborhood? And so we're trying to move to a direction where there's reentry programming, treatment, and job skill training while they're in prison, and then a seamless way when they get out So they're provided with housing, treatment, and a job, so we can turn around the high recidivism rate, which is upwards of 60%.
Thank you, Representative Pemar. Representative Hausman.
Representative Pemar, to that last point, I do sometimes think that is the absolute worst, the job, that it's just so much easier with so many other people in the job market to hire someone else, and if they don't get the job, turning their life around becomes more difficult, and we have to partner, it seems to me, with someone else, and I don't know if that partnership is happening yet in this state.
Madam Chair,
Representative
Hausman, we have some ideas, and we have there's a whole new thinking in criminology now that this is the direction we need to move, not just because it's humane, but it also makes fiscal sense, rather than having such a high recidivism rate. So there are some efforts. We have some very good ideas that are coming out of the nonprofit world, and the DOC could conceivably partner with them so that we provide some of these offenders with a job when they get out of prison. Just aside to this, and I had Representative Clark's constituent came in to see me the other day, and he had, and he was a sex offender, you know. It was second degree sex offense, and I didn't really ask him about his crime, but he had a list of 350 different jobs that he applied for, and probably 30 or 40 that he actually got past the first step, and several that had actually said, you got the job. He had a management background in the past before he went to prison. And every one of them, once they found out he was a felon and a sex offender, said that the company couldn't hire him for insurance purposes. So, you know, these people are getting out, and we're going to have to figure something out. Otherwise, they're going back in because they're just not going to be able to afford to get a house, to get an apartment, and to live in our society. So it's a daunting question, and I, you know, if you have anything to add, Tony.
Well,
thank you. Yeah. Representative Cornish.
Maybe a different side to it.
I realize that you can't hang them all or lock them all up, but the only other alternative is to do something in reentry and looking at some of the statistics and the feasibility of us keeping paying for them. And I think the trend of the committee is going to look at some really good accountability programs, not just the fluff stuff, but the challenge incarceration, real supervision after follow-up. And so I would agree with the destination of the committee's direction.
Thank you. Any further comments? At this time, Representative Lanchesky is here, and if you would like to make a few comments about your committee, since we had the testimony earlier, and I'll just give you some time right now if that would be all right with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I apologize, I wasn't here for Ms. Schill's presentation to the committee, and I understand that they covered the tax credit and aids portion of the tax committee's work, and I know that Mr. Marks has covered the revenue side prior to today's meeting, so I'm not really sure what you'd like to know. The tax committee is working diligently, and of course our main focus this session is property tax relief. So the aids and credits presentation should have shown you that we do both aids to individuals and credits to individuals and aids to local jurisdictions. So we're working to try to figure out what's the best way to slice up payments for things like LGA and county aid and school levies, and then individual property tax relief like the property tax refund program, market value credit, and senior deferral and targeting. So that's kind of, I think, the end result, I hope, of the committee this year will be predominantly property tax relief, but that's working through Representative Marquardt's committee. They'll have the division report ready on March 23rd, and that will be the base omnibus tax bill. And then we'll have the debate about further things that folks are interested in the tax committee area, unless there are questions.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Lanchesky. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Lanchesky, where do we have the philosophical discussion about whether this state moves in a progressive tax direction or a regressive tax direction?
Lanchesky.
Thank you for that question, Representative Hausman, Madam Chair. We're having it regularly in the Tax Committee. I think one of the concerns that we're focusing a lot of time on, at least in the big contextual part of the tax committee right now, as opposed to getting sort of sidetracked by individual bills, is what are we going to do about Minnesota's tax structure going forward? We have huge problems on the horizon. We are protecting our income tax base will decline as the baby boom retires. The sales tax base is eroding dramatically right now. We have moved from taxing about 100% of the sales economy to less than 40, and that's because we are a service-driven economy now. We only tax products, and we're not even taxing all the products. So we're not taxing a lot of what's in the commodity part of the sales tax base, and we're not taxing services. We had a little trial run for members to see what it's like to tax a service, and that was Representative Kahn's tax on optional cosmetic surgery. And it was fun to kind of see how members reacted to broadening the base, and that's kind of as easy as it'll ever get. We are having that discussion about broadening the sales tax base, and then to make it maybe more progressive would be to add an income credit on the low end. If we could expand the income tax base now, these aren't rates, we would look to try to improve the incidence in the top two deciles, bringing them more into line to the bottom eight. Similarly, the corporate tax is in disarray. It's our most volatile piece of the state budget. It's 10% of the total tax receipts, but causes probably 75% of the volatility, and we can't really understand why. There are many theories as to what's happening in the corporate tax and why it's so volatile, but our corporate tax, and many members who've sat on the tax committee for a while know that business taxes are extremely regressive. So we kind of only have the income tax that's regressive, and so there are ways to make sales taxes more progressive and make the property tax more progressive, and that's by adding credits at the lower end of the income area. But we don't have a lot to work with, and so we are struggling with it. We're going to hear the tax incidence report from the Department of Revenue on March 6th, and that's where members yearly get to see who's really paying the tax and how do all the taxes flow through to the deciles, and that's kind of, you know, become sort of the gold standard for the tax committee, and that's when people really have to get away from the anecdotal information they hear and kind of focus on the facts. And so we'll be doing that, some heavy work on that on March 6th.
Thank you, Representative Lynchewski. Any questions? Representative Cornish.
As a representative of Penske, I just wanted to echo that I really like the idea of the sales tax. If you could put protection on low end, to me that's the most common or the easiest one to push in my area. Property taxes are getting so high that it's scaring everybody out of taxes in general, whether it's income or property, whatever it is. They're getting so paranoid. That note I sent you, I'm sorry I didn't send you a solution with it. I just sent you a scenario with what's going on in my district. Never been in the tax committee. I don't know how to solve it, but hopefully you'll be able to work with that. And these skyrocketing property taxes on non-ag or what they're starting to call recreational land now. We got a farmer in my area that is only, we haven't even got enough farmable land to get rent off to pay the taxes on the recreational land because of the hunting leases and everything that's making it so high. So good luck.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, I would just like to let members know that Representative Junkie will be able to give his comments when he's able to be with us at the next meeting, since he was not able to comment on the report by Jim Reinholtz. Also, the finance will be meeting next week at 10 a.m. to wrap up hearings from the fiscal accounts. And Representative Solberg has invited the Finance Committee members to join the Ways and Means Committee at 9 a.m. Monday to hear a presentation on the February forecast. I would also like to remind members of the bill referrals attached. And at this point, the meeting will be adjourned.
Thank you, Tony.